Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq Market Site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Up and up. Rates keep climbing. The 10-year hitting its highest intraday level in more than 15 years. One top market watcher is now saying this rate surge makes the market rally completely unsustainable. Plus, Apple's golden delicious day. The stock popping as iPhone pre-orders seem strong, and a host of analysts paint a bullish picture for the tech giant. We'll go inside the numbers coming up. And later, ARK Investment CEO Cathie Wood will join us. She is weighing in on her recent sale of Tesla shares, the Innovation Fund's 2023 rebound, AI, the cloud, and much more. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, Guy Adami, and Steve Grasso. And we begin with the milestone move in interest rates, the yield on 10-year treasuries briefly touching their highest level in nearly 16 years this morning before pulling back just a touch, the two-year trading where it was just before the collapse of SVB. But the move higher hasn't seemed to stop the stock market. While the three major indices are basically flat today, they're all still well in positive territory for the year. It's a phenomenon that has at least one Wall Street veteran scratching his head. J.P. Morgan's Marco Kalanovic saying the move higher in both stocks and rates is unsustainable. So will this disconnect be corrected? And does that mean a reckoning is coming for equities? Now, we play this game often.
If you showed me the chart.
If I told you something.
You jumped the gun.
How would you guess?
You jumped the gun.
What?
I was wrong.
Is that what you're going to say?
No, I was waiting for you to ask the question.
If I said the 10-year yield was going to get to a 15-year high.
Right.
What would you say stocks would do?
I would say the S&P 500 is 3,800 on its way to the October low, that equities are not trading well, that Russell small cap stocks are probably underperforming the broader market, which is getting whacked. And the VIX is probably approaching 20.
And what happened today?
None of those things are happening, which is really interesting. So how does it reconcile yourself with this? The second part of the answer? Well, it's one of two ways, obviously. Yields start to back up and equities continue to go higher, or yields continue to go higher and equities figure it out. By the way, I think there's a scenario where yields go lower and equities go lower, because if the equity market leads and starts to sell off precipitously, you might see a flight to quality in the form of the bond market, Melissa Lee.
Well, and that's what's interesting about where rates are, because if you had told me, you mentioned SVB, if you told me that rates are back up to where they were pre-SVB, I'd say banks probably have been rallying. And for the most part, you know, banks have been the biggest underperformer of the major sector groups. Look, I love Marco's work. And in fact, when he says stuff like this, I listen. You know, pointing out divergences in this market is easy. And we've been doing it. Marco's been doing it. A lot of people have been doing it, which whether it's the, you know, leading indicators versus a forward PE of the S&P. I mean, talk about a divergence. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. But clearly, as it relates to today, and this is a big week, this is a week where we have policy decisions in the U.S., in Japan, in the BOE. And, you know, it was a day when actually Japanese stocks went to a 33-year high on the topics. But it was a day when equities this morning, we looked at the screens in the first hour of trading, even the first half an hour, semis, which are the leadership group, were down big. So the correlation, equities, I think, have been trading in sympathy with bond yields for the last month. There's a big disconnect to close at some point on valuations, but I think the stock market for the last month and a half has been paying attention.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up small caps. I mean, you know, the underperformance there, I think, is interesting. And we also know, again, there's a whole host of like financially oriented sort of names. If you look at the KRE, the regional bank index, does not act particularly well. Looks like it's breaking down technically. And, you know, I think, again, you know, I think what Tim says, it's been very easy to point out divergences. It hasn't been easy to make money on those divergences. And right now, when you think about where yields, where they are relative to where they were a year ago and where the S&P is, it's really astounding. We're basically 4,600 versus 3,600. If you look at crude oil, was also last at these kind of levels, you know, about 9-10 months or so ago. And then when you look at the dollar, the U.S. dollar, the way that's moving, all that to me should not be supportive of equity valuations. It's taking note, I think, within small caps and financials, like I just said, but it's yet to do that in the broad market. And I'll just make one last point. In late 2021, there were no shortage of signs that we were about to go into an equity bear market, despite the fact the S&P made a new high in January of 2022. too. There were lots of things under the hood. That was a big narrative that we talked about on the show. I think similar things are playing out right now in the equity markets. And if you're just looking at other risk assets away from equity markets, it should signal, at least it does to me, that we could be in for a period of downward volatility in the not so distant future.
Are you worried about stocks, Grasso?
Yeah, I'm always worried about stocks. But, you know, for your Marco, I'll raise you a Mike Goldstein at Empirical Research, where he points out that interest rate sensitivity for the U.S. economy is really less dependent on those where it used to be more dependent. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. The path of interest rates doesn't dictate the market, as you all have just said. When you look at the market now, look at last week. I think the most important things that happened last week were the UAW. It was Apple. It was China. It was spilling out to the rest of tech. It was oil moving higher. I don't think necessarily. Oh, and then throw in there CPI and PPI. You had some positive news there that made the market react with higher interest rates, which doesn't necessarily mean that the market's going down. And then if you look at FactSet, the analytics through them, September, this week in September is historically the worst week or five straight losing days in the market for the last 73 years. That's pretty important because you have mutual funds that wrap up their fiscal year in September and in October. What does that mean? They mark up and they mark down. But October is historically the month that everything rallies back because we're going into fourth quarter. People are looking towards November and December and that seasonality. So I think this September has the outsized propensity to suck in a lot of bears. I'm not as worried as I think I should be on the market.
I think that the historical pattern that you pointed out, I mean, that sort of brings up the old saying, sell Rosh Hashanah, buy Yom Kippur, because it's approximately the right timing. But what's different about this market is that, you know, if you're worried about higher rates and rates going higher, breaking the markets, there was a flight, seemingly, to big cap technology, which then props the markets up. Mm-hmm. We saw Meta, Alphabet, Apple, semiconductors all do relatively better than the broader markets.
Interesting, without question. And, you know, I go back to the Carrie Dance right to point it out. Bottomed right after Silicon Valley Bank, went from 34.5 to 49. Here we are at 42. I think that's telling a story, number one. And some very quietly, a name like AMB, now I'm cherry picking for sure. That stock topped out about 138, either side of $100 now. So you have some semis that are starting to give back. NVIDIA had a decent day today, bounced off the lows. But that stock, very quietly, is off about 15% from the post-market gains it saw after they reported. So I think valuations matter in a higher interest rate environment. I think rates are going higher. I don't know how equities can continue to be supported in a higher rate environment.
The stocks that should do best in that environment, though, are the stocks like a Microsoft, who basically got zero debt on their balance sheet when you consider with the cash they have on their balance sheet and actually the differential on what they paid to lock in their debt versus what they're earning on their cash. I mean, they're going to actually be earnings accretive in a higher rate environment. And so, you know, what does this mean? We always yearn for that moment where we see the breadth in the market and we can not have to fall back in mega cap tech. And I've said many times, I'm going to continue to say it, I think we've seen their best days in terms of their aggregate S&P weighting. But everything we're talking about probably continues to support big cap tech. And it's not good for industrials and the value stocks and the places that have a lot of cyclicality. And they've definitely underperformed.
This also means that we could have a scenario where rates go higher and we're sort of at a standstill in the markets.
Yeah,
because you got big cap tech propping everything higher.
Well, I mean, listen, that's how the market's trading right now. Yeah. But I think it's important under the hood. Again, some of the technical stuff is breaking down. I mean, Apple is the largest equity in the land and it's breaking down. Microsoft's about to do that. If you look at like a Netflix, which, again, is not on market cap terms as significant as the others, it was just a sentiment leader. The same way Meta was. And, you know, that thing is down more than 20% from its recent high. So there's some technical damage being done by some of the sentiment leaders. I'll also take you. And I know we've talked about, you know, these airline stocks. And maybe this has to do with oil, but look at the transports. When you look at what's in the transports, we have obviously FedEx is going to report later on the week. We see how poorly UPS is acting. There's a bunch of the freighters, the truckers, the, you know, all this sort of stuff. You know, that's down about 9% or so just in the last few weeks. So there are some things that you would normally tie to the performance of the economy in the stock market that are not trading particularly well. And I think we've been very complacent for a very long time. And I think some of us have been on, obviously me included, on the wrong side of this for the better latter part of this year. But the longer we go and we don't have that recession that the market was pricing in a near certainty of late last year, it's the closer we are to one, and then the market has to start pricing it in again. And I just think that going back to the start of this conversation, when you think about where the dollar is, you think of the way crude is moving, you think where yields are and where people like Guy think yields could go, that's just not supportive of equity markets.
I hear you on everything. I'll just say, though, that we've done all this with equities, with the dollar rallying mm-hmm. through the roof. We've done this with yields testing higher. We're going into the best 2 months of seasonality in the year. Everybody thinks September's going to be awful. Tells me we're probably going to go higher. And the fundamentals don't warrant the equities trading here. And this is what Marco said. This is what we've all said. But I do look at how the market has performed during a period where you've thrown a lot at it. And we're starting to see the cracks in the consumer. I think we're going to get a lot more news on this. But to me, as much as I've also pointed out the relative either lack of making a new high on the triple Qs or the SMH to the S&P, they're not folding and they're not caving. And that's strong.
I'm sorry, the Chevron quickly. I mean, he's talking his book clearly, but Mike Wirth was talking about the potential for crude oil to trade north of $100. I understand he's the CEO of Chevron. I get it. But the point is, his thesis is right in terms of supply-demand imbalances we've talked about for a while. That doesn't help the equation either.
All right. Our next guest warns investors are in a distorted environment. Joe Lavorgna was the chief economist at the National Economic Council under former President Trump. He's now chief economist at SMBC Nikko Securities America. Joe, great to see you.
Same here. Great to see you guys.
What's distorted about this environment? The fact that usual relationships aren't really working out this time around?
Part of it, Melissa, and that probably explains why the recession hasn't happened yet. I mean, we had COVID, we shut down what effectively was a $40 trillion economy, if we include the business-to-business part, not just GDP. And it seems like we finally now have worked through those dislocations. If you look at the global supply chains, for the most part, they seem to be normal. What's interesting to me, though, Melissa, is the yield curve. It's continued an ongoing inversion. The fact the leading indicators continue to remain deeply negative, with most of those series contributing to the downside. And yet it seems that the narrative has developed that now we've hit a soft landing. And the point that I've been making to clients and investors is that given the lags, we're still within that window, that time frame, whereby these indicators still could be very useful. And one of the reasons we haven't had a recession probably is the fact that the government is spending a tremendous amount of money. But that won't persist indefinitely, because I'd argue interest rates are very high, and eventually, as Dan was saying, there will be cracks in the consumer.
So you think that 2024, we're going to start to see it? We're going to start to see the economy get hit?
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised, Melissa, if we're actually seeing it now. I mean, I think back to 08, which was different in some ways, but also similar in the sense that when we went into 08, many economists had thought there was going to be a recession. When Bear got bought by J.P. Morgan, there was stimulative tax policy. The Fed had created this new program called the Term Securities Lending Facility. Risk was, you know, everybody was in a risk on mode back in the spring of 08. And we were actually in recession and didn't know it until basically Lehman hit. So there are some parallels that could be happening now. Watch the unemployment rate. When that unemployment rate, every time since the Second World War, when it's risen half a basis point, or rather 50 basis points, half a percent from its low, you've been in recession.
Joe, handicap for us the economy then. And if you were a trader, we'd ask you for levels on a stock. But give me levels on the economy. How deep? Because if we're talking about a shallow recession, you can make an argument that equities have at times plumbed down to that level, tested it. And it really depends on some of the severity. The cracks in the credit markets are things that are very tough to read. And I agree that they're there. But
yes.
Tell me what you're staring at, because you're the economist.
But, Tim, I don't think, look, to me, there's a recession because the indicators that have worked over many cycles are telling me there's going to be a recession. How deep it will be, I don't know. Nobody knows. It depends on what the policy response is when it happens. Had the authorities, had Ben Bernanke and Paulson done a bit better job in figuring out how to deal with Lehman, we would not have had a deep recession back in 08. That's my view. It would have been very mild. It may have been more mild than where it was back in 2000. So it depends when you get there what happens. Because recessions typically are nonlinear, you get these psychological breaks if certain things happen that people don't expect. What the response is from the Fed and the response from the government, the fiscal authorities, is key. And as you know, next year, you've got a political election. And I think it's pretty safe to say it's going to be divisive.
So, Joe, when you look at recessions, they're only told in hindsight. That's how you locate it. So I'm of the belief, or I'm of the premise, that we could have actually been in recession in December of 2022. But pull that forward. Is there a shot we're in recession right now and we've already troughed in earnings and we're bouncing from here?
The problem, no. And it's possible. We did have an inflationary recession in the first half of 22 when GDP was negative for two quarters. What's interesting, and the Biden administration said the gross domestic income numbers are better, and there's some validity to that. The problem is the income numbers now have been negative. So it's possible we're in recession. But, Steve, we've never had a period where the equity market would have discounted the recession that's maybe just hitting now a year in advance, meaning the equity market bottomed last October and now we're maybe entering one. I mean, it's possible. History would say it's highly, highly unlikely.
Joe, always great to get your thoughts. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Great being with you.
Joe Lavorgna. Steve, I'll ask that same question. Do you think that we're in a recession now?
I think that we've already seen an earnings trough. I think we've seen inflation peak. So that would be a less of a headwind for corporations. So I think earnings are actually going to get better. I think you can make the case that we've already been in recession, but the consumer cannot crack until the jobs numbers crack. And I'm not a buyer, or I should say a seller, of student loan repayment becoming this magnificent headwind, because the administration still said they're not giving up on this. So I don't think everyone's going to go back to actually paying their student loans, nor do I think it's going to be enforced if they don't.
Well, I think the keys to the household dynamics and the debt interest coverage expenses, et cetera, that we've seen is that you really don't know when the consumer is going to break. What we are seeing is there's a lot of places that were very defensive, and I would go right to staples, which have massively underperformed. They've underperformed the S&P by 16%. I think some of this is a consumer that's just not paying 10 to 20% more for a can of Coke. Are you paying 10 to 20% more?
I don't drink soda, Tim. As you notice by what's on R, we all drink water. And, you know, this is hydrating. The more you know type of thing.
Yeah.
Sugary drinks are not cool
anymore.
What
if they're a diet?
No, even worse. As a matter of fact, if you listen to, like, who's that person, like the Surgeon General or somebody? I mean, they will tell you that if you're going to drink soda, you might as well drink the real stuff, because the stuff with the saccharin.
Remember Tab?
Tab. Excuse me?
You still drink Tab. I know you do.
Of course
do.
He does.
Man, I keep squirreling away cases.
I don't even know how this, we got
like
into
a
this
Fresca
conversation.
Guy, aren't you guys?
Oh, I like Fresca.
Yeah. How about a Fresca? Yeah.
Anyway. We digress. Coming up, we're just going to go to break. Keep an eye on Apple. Shares gaining as analysts bite into the latest iPhone offerings. So after a rough couple months, are things finally starting to turn up for the tech giant? We'll debate that next. Plus, make sure to stretch for this next one. Lulu and Nike also catching some analysts' attention. So which one is the best fit for your portfolio? The one they're leaning into when Fast Money returns. Back in two.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. It's apple picking season and Wall Street is feeling festive. A handful of firms out with bullish notes saying demand is strong for the tech company's newest iPhone 15S. Shares seeing green today, climbing nearly 1.7%. So should you bite into this name now? Everybody is so geeked up, Dan, as you would say.
For the USB-C port?
Apparently, everybody wants one of these things. Well, the wait times are long. The demand is good. The only
seems odd.
Is
listen,
why?
We've been doing this a long time. Okay, literally, the show started like right around the iPhone's
sure.
introduction. It did. And we talk about the announcements and we talk about the lead up to it. There's no such thing as super cycles. They don't exist. Upgrade super cycles. Okay, like think about that. How many times have we talked about this in the narrative? So, because there's a website that shows the lead times and they get pushed out, the fact that this stock has gained 100 billion. $2 trillion, whatever the heck it did today, makes absolutely no sense. Now, granted, it's down, and it's been down over the last couple months for two big fundamental reasons, if you think about it, right? Their guidance wasn't particularly great. And so I just looked at stock trading 27 times, expected earnings growth of high single digits, sales growth of mid single digits, and I see massive headwinds with China and massive headwinds towards manufacturing and access to demand in China. And I just don't see a stock that makes a lot of sense at those levels.
I mean, the other thing we don't know is the supply level. Mm-hmm. You know, how many phones is Apple supplying, manufacturing? And so therefore, are these lead times true lead times or are they manufactured lead times? Grasso, I know you got into Apple. You're still in it, I assume.
Yeah.
Are you disappointed with the performance?
No, I'm not disappointed with the performance. I think to Dan's point, markets overshoot in both directions. So they might overshoot to the upside based on little data or little fundamentals, but they definitively overshot to the downside last week. We're talking about a million phones maybe in China, not the 45 million phones, and they factored in 45 million. So you can't say that it overshoots just in one direction. It overshot to the downside, and that's why I picked up shares. I think that that's dissipating. I think the headwinds will probably dissipate. I think that the China negativity will fall short, and I think the stock will rally much further than where it is now. Look at the price targets on the street. They're all or mostly above $200, and I think I could ride this thing up to either mid-190s or 200.
Both cases, we held the prior all-time high from December of 21, and that the stock actually is traded okay, given the sell-off. The bear case is China spent 24 hours sending 103 warplanes, not into Taiwan airspace, but close enough where it made it to meet the press. I mean, they're not just practicing there. This China-Taiwan situation continues to seemingly escalate. The more people we send over to negotiate with China, the worse things seem to get. And ask yourself this. God forbid something were to happen between China and Taiwan. It forces Apple's hand, which won't be good for the stock.
Forces our hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Warrior pose engaged. Analyst stretching into Lululemon, saying this brand could go all upward dog. So, should you namaste in this name? Plus, Tesla on a tear this year. And money manager Kathy Wood is making some moves in the name. She'll join us next to break down her latest investments and where she sees stocks heading next. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Every day, thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists put people at the heart of everything they create. Like Olu Sheyi, a Comcast engineer who grew up bonding with his dad over sports. This inspired him and his team to create AI Highlights technology that uses AI and machine learning to detect the major plays in a sporting event. So millions of fans have a way of catching up on their favorite sports. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Time for our call of the day. HSBC taking position in Lululemon, initiating the stock as a buy with a $500 price target. That's almost $60 above the street average, according to FactSet. Even with shares basically flat over the last 3 years, HSBC seeing growth ahead for the retailer, saying it could hit its long-term targets as much as a year ahead of schedule. Still, shares finished the day down almost 2%. Interesting. Basically, they said that they liked every other sports apparel retailer better than Nike, because they preferred Adidas and Puma over Nike, and then they ended up initiating Lulu with a buy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that are concerned about sports apparel overall, but Lulu, you know, it's hard to push back on Lulu in terms of the company that with the leadership they have in the segment. To me, I'm pushing back on the valuation, and I'm pushing out a new catalyst. We know about international. We know China was up there at 61% year over year. Those numbers that they just reported 2Q were fantastic numbers. By the way, look at the stock. It's come all the way back to where it was going into that fantastic report and the upgrades that followed. To me, this is truly a stock that trailing 49 times, going forward at around 33, 34 times, with an earnings profile that if you look at it from 22 to 24, almost doubles. And I just think that that's what the problem is. The problem is not anything with what they're doing in terms of the brand. It's the same thing I'm going to make about Nike. This valuation in this environment when discretionary where it is, I mean, I don't know how many pairs of those yoga pants, you know, that we need. And by the way, the guy segment is cool and whatnot, but I mean, you know, I'm not buying
box of briefs. They're tremendous.
I'm not buying them.
No, you should look into it. I'm telling you, change
your
world.
Are you feeling better?
Pardon me?
Are you feeling better?
I've never felt better.
Too much information.
Listen, 405 to Tim's point, that's where we topped out when they reported earnings. We're trading 385 now. The reason I mention that, because that was a high we saw back in November, I think, of last year. So there's obviously a technical reason is where we failed. It's not an indictment of the stock or the company. It's a great company coming off a great quarter. It's a valuation problem at close to 30 times, and it's a technical problem in terms of where we stopped. There'll be an opportunity, I think, to buy the stock cheaper.
Coming up, we're talking with ARK Invest's Cathy Wood, the longtime Tesla bull, selling some shares last week, what she sees for the company, where she's putting her money right now. Don't go anywhere. More Fast Money in 2. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks giving a big yawn to the start of the week. All three indices in positive territory, but just barely. Energy leading the S&P while consumer discretionary lagged. Macy's, the dollar stores, Target, and Smucker all hovering near 52-week lows, near something that hasn't happened in a while. Eli Lilly down for a fourth straight day, its longest losing streak since July. Tesla shares dropping more than 3% today. CEO Elon Musk denying a report the company is in early talks to build an EV factory in Saudi Arabia. This comes a day after Turkish President Erdogan invited Musk to build his next factory in that country. So what does the road look like for Tesla? Let's bring in Cathy Wood, the ARK Invest CEO. Tesla is her number one holding in the ARK Innovation ETF. Cathy, great to have you with us here on Fast.
Well, I'm happy to be with you, Melissa. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, the traders and I were talking here on the desk about Tesla and how your bear case for Tesla is $1,400 a share. Guy here said he'd take $1,400 because that's still pretty bullish. What is in, let's just even say the bear case, what assumptions are made about its business to get to that $1,400 by 27 number?
Well, about a third of our valuation is associated with electric vehicles, EVs, and scaling them. And as you mentioned, Turkey, a plant there, many countries do want a Tesla plant because this is the new world, right? So that's good. This is all working out. And then two-thirds of our valuation is around autonomous and autonomous taxi platforms. We think Tesla is in the pole position here in the United States. It has collected more data about our roads and actually other roads around the world than all of the other companies combined. And therefore, it has more corner cases and probably will be the company that will get people from point A to point B as quickly and safely as possible. So it's a winner-take-most market. So whether it's our base case, it just means autonomous perhaps takes a little longer to play out, or the bull case, it happens much more quickly.
So even the if it takes longer to play out, it's still $1,400. That seems extremely optimistic in terms of even the regulatory green lights that Tesla would need for autonomy. It seems also, you know, that the model where Tesla owners would own their cars and then they would go out and earn them money during the day by driving people around, that also seems sort of optimistic in terms of the uptake of that, Cathy. So, you know, for two-thirds of the valuation, do you feel like that there's risk even around the bear case at all with the two-thirds?
Well, actually, the risks are going down because regulators are very data driven. And what regulators have been experiencing, especially in the transportation sector, is that the number of auto deaths in the United States has gone up during the past 5 to 10 years, from 30,000 to 45,000, after decades of falling thanks to auto safety measures. So the National Highway and Transportation Safety Board and other transportation authorities want to turn that trend back down. Why has it happened? A lot of it is because of texting, and therefore a disproportionate number of young people are dying in auto accidents. So the data supports what Tesla is doing. 80 to 90% of all accidents on the roads are caused by human error. If you take the human being out of the equation and use AI to get people from point A to point B as safely, as quickly as possible, I think the authorities, the regulators, are going to be persuaded by the data. In fact, they already have been in terms of the fatalities in Tesla's cars. They examine them. They say not Tesla's fault for the most part. And oh, by the way, people driving in Tesla cars are 40% plus safer with autopilot and FSD than in other cars.
So, Kathy, right now I think Tesla's about $850 billion company. Next year they'll do about $125 billion in revenues. Your math suggests a $4.25 trillion company. What revenue growth would be commensurate with that type of market cap? In other words, where will revenue be by that time?
So it's not just revenue growth. If you and EVs are taking share at an accelerated rate from gas-powered cars. And Tesla is evolving factories. I mean, Elon has said, I'm a manufacturer of factories faster than any other auto manufacturer, tech provider out there. So we think that that side of the equation, they've got down. The key here is autonomous. Autonomous margins. So you mentioned revenue, but margins are more important. Auto margins, EV margins, are in the 20 to 30% range. This is gross margins. Autonomous is a SaaS model, software as a service model. Those margins alone are in the 80% range. So it's not just revenues, it is margins that are going to deliver upside surprises. So to get to we have Tesla, yes, going to $5 trillion in market cap. And many people, when we first put this forecast out, said, that's crazy, that's impossible. But then Apple got to $3 trillion, and now everyone's saying, wow, winner take most, or companies that are doing something highly differentiated actually can get to those kinds of market caps. So our revenue growth is in the 50% plus range over the next 5 to 10 years per year as EVs take over the market from gas-powered vehicles.
Hey, Kathy, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. And, you know, you're talking about 5 to 10 years, at some level, an extraordinary long time to be looking out and modeling back. But this is part of how you invest. And if I look at the Innovation Fund, there's no question that you are investing for the long term. And I guess that's my question. How do you think about short-term tactical versus long-term being invested? And for investors who own your fund and who look at performance, and you've had some great years, you've had some difficult years. This fund is down 1.32% on average over the last 5 years. The stories you're talking about are long-term growth, exciting stories. Help us understand that a little bit more.
Well, first, let me put in context that five-year number, because you know, our expectation is that we will deliver a 15% compound annual rate of return over the next 5 years. Why did that not happen over the last 5 years? The biggest reason is an increase in interest rates, 23-fold over not much more than 1 year's time. Never seen that in history, actually. And that that interest rate increase was very difficult for any long duration strategy, including long-term bond strategies. Bonds had their worst year in 2022 since the 1700s. Bonds are usually supposed to protect investors, but when interest rates are jacked up by 23-fold, this did not even happen under Chairman Volcker in the early 80s. His yields went up 2-fold. This is 22, 23, 24-fold. It was going to be a killer for our kinds of strategy. We think they've overdone it, and we do think the next big set of moves during the next year, I would say, are going to be down. And if interest rates, the fear of interest rates going up and interest rates actually going up hurt our strategy that badly, then I would expect the opposite to happen the other way around. So now your question about how do we think about short term? Disruptive innovation is inherently controversial. You've got the old guard. Take the auto industry. When we first started modeling Tesla, or when we started ARC in 2014 and we were putting out our forecasts, you know, everyone dismissed them. Electric vehicles weren't going to be a reality in any kind of meaningful sense for the next 10 to 15 years. That was wrong. And we were right on that. But because it is so controversial, we get great trading opportunities. And so you will see us buy Tesla when everyone is hating on it. It will remain our largest position because we think the autonomous taxi platform opportunity is the biggest opportunity from an economic point of view in the next 5 to 10 years, delivering 8 to 10 trillion in revenues in the next 5 to 10 years from basically nothing now. And then on the other side, when everybody gets really excited about the possibilities, we know there's going to be another controversial moment. So we will take profits and we will trade around. So yes, we do have a short-term trading strategy around the controversy that our innovation platforms cause.
Kathy, always great to see you. We hope you'll come back. Kathy Wood, ARK Invest.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You can hear more from Kathy Wood at CNBC's Financial Advisor Summit in October. That's October 12th. Scan the QR code to register or visit cnbcevents.com/FA. Let's trade this, Dan.
Well, it's interesting. You know, listen, as automotive margins have come down dramatically for this stock from 25.5% last year to, I think, 18 or so, and probably on the way down, there's more price cuts that are coming, okay? The goalposts have shifted. Like, you know, we talked about the Adam Jonas note, about the supercomputer, about Dojo, about robots. I mean, it keeps getting more sci-fi. Again, this is an auto company right now that trades with an $850 billion market cap that doesn't make a lot of sense with declining, I mean, literally declining market share and declining margins. That is what it is, okay? But when she talks about the opportunity for this stock to reach $4 or $5 trillion, it's based on autonomy. Right now, Waymo and Cruise have level 4 autonomy. Elon's been talking about level 4 autonomy. We were supposed to have it by his predictions a few years ago. They don't have it. They don't use LiDAR. Waymo and Cruise use LiDAR. When you talk about regulation and the ability to get autonomous taxi fleets, they're going to have some technology that the regulators feel comfortable about. I don't know if anytime soon they're going to feel comfortable with something that doesn't have these LiDAR sort of, cameras on them. And so to me, if that's a big part of this valuation, I think it's dicey right now because they've been wrong on the direction and the speed in which they were going to hit level 4 for years.
Coming up, options traders arm wrestling over ARM Holdings. Shares twisted lower today. We'll hit the options pits for their next move. That trade is next. Fast Money's back in 2. Welcome back to Fast Money. We are still waiting on details for the Instacart IPO pricing. Let's get to Leslie Picker to see where we stand at this point. Leslie.
Hey, Mel. Yeah, final pricing decisions still underway for Instacart's IPO. I'm told they could come within the next 45 minutes or so. It's been a long road, of course, for the grocery delivery service, which filed an S-1 confidentially 16 months ago. But when the market took a turn amid higher interest rates and a sell-off in tech stocks, Instacart ultimately put its deal on ice. And ultimately, Instacart set terms that market its deal at a quarter of the valuation it received in a private round 2 years ago. Investors feeling like they got a good deal put orders in, and demand was strong enough that Instacart raised its price range by $2 a share. That means it will likely price at the high end of the new range or above, but those things can take some deliberations, and that's what's going on right now. So the majority of the offering has already been claimed by cornerstone investors, including Norges Bank, TCV, Sequoia, D1, and Valiant. That leaves a very small float to sell, $260 million for institutional and retail investors to buy at the IPO price, less than 3% of the shares outstanding on a fully diluted basis. So we'll see if the structure of this IPO, you've got a down round, a significant cornerstone investor component, a profitable company, and a single class of shares, Maybe that makes that IPO palatable in a still uncertain environment, but we'll see, Melissa.
All right, Les, thanks. Leslie Picker. Meantime, ARM shares falling 4.5% after analysts at Bernstein slapped a $46 price target on the stock. That's 20% downside from today's close. Options contracts also started trading today. For more on what they are saying, let's get to Mike Coe. Mike.
Yeah, so normally we talk about the multiple to the average volume. This being the first day, we don't have that, but it was the 45th busiest single stock option, and we saw puts outpacing calls by more than 2-1. Most of the activity, October puts, the busiest contract, the 50 strike puts, trading over 11,000 contracts at $1.33 a contract. The 52.5 and 55 strike puts were also very active. So we're looking at some volatility for the next month or two, at least.
Mike, thanks. Mike Coe. Steve, you've been trading this.
Yeah, any stock that goes from 55 when it comes out on the first day to roughly $68 is a trader's paradise. And then if you look at the volatility, Melissa, up and down, it's obviously in a declining trend. So I don't think you should necessarily invest in these names, but this really creates alpha for a trader to really build around those edges. I plan on trading Instacart tomorrow as well. I expect that to be very volatile.
All right, for more options action, tune into the full show. That is Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, summer's over, but don't put those shorts away. The Chartmaster joins us next with a handful of timely shorts. Not literally, obviously. And here's a sneak peek of the Cramer Cam. Jim is chatting exclusively with Oracle CEO Safra Katz. Catch the full interview, top of the hour, on Mad Money. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Instead of our favorite game of so bad it's good, where we take a look at some names gearing up for a breakout, today the Chartmaster has a couple of stocks that look attractive from the short side. Let's dive in with Carter Worth of Worth Charting. Carter, what are you looking at?
You bet. So I thought might single out two names that are great winners. I mean, heretofore great winners that have all the elements of rolling over, meaning slippage is the word that comes to mind. So again, massive outperformer since the COVID low, triples and more, and now showing all the hallmarks of distribution, bearish price volume correlation, poor relative strength, et cetera. Let's look at the first of two. This is Ulta, a name known to all, a retailer, always considered a growth stock and often considered by many quite expensive. And you can see here, of course, this is a $20 billion company that basically went from 150 to 500 a share coming off the COVID low. But day to day, this action, again, has all the hallmarks what I would characterize as a bullish to bearish reversal, heretofore strong and now starting to roll. Now, by contradistinction, look at the second of two this evening. This is Amdocs. This is a sort of under the radar IT services, but again, 10 billion market cap. And here too, we have something that basically was trading in $40 plus minus the COVID low and made it up to 100. But now also breaking trend, also showing all the characteristics of distribution, which is to say a stock that acts poorly day to day in terms of relative performance to the market, and in terms of absolute performance, having broken trend. I think if you're long either of these, you want to take measures that would be to trim, reduce, or write calls, if not just come out altogether. And for those who do engage in short selling, these are two candidates.
Carter, thanks. Carter Braxton Worth of Worth Charting. What do you think of this handful of shorts? Guy.
Valuation obviously is going to get in the way of a number of these stocks. Again, some like Ulta, for example, everybody loved the stock when valuation didn't matter. This was lower left, upper right. Valuation is concerned. Now you've seen it sort of struggling. So I'm with him. And the fact that he can use heretofore correctly.
I was waiting for him to to break into whilst. It's almost a great time.
No, Carter trumps my what? Well, heretofore trumps whilst.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I agree.
I think so, too.
Well, on Ulta, I think you have a case where this was a stock that was in the sweet spot coming out of COVID. The valuation wasn't terribly challenging. I think you've gotten to a place where it is. I think if you look at like beauty pricing normalization, this is something that's also starting to come back. I think you look at discretionary and we've spent time talking tonight about the consumer. I think we've seen a peak.
I think whilst is also trumped by heretofore.
Yeah, well,
he said
right.
Yeah, no, he did.
I give Carter his props. He's on the Mount Rushmore.
of technicians, but also of
just in grammarless.
No one tells a story like Carter. You know, he kind of slows it down for you. He kind of gives you, you know, to the penny. He kind of delivers. You know?
Up next, Final Trip. Trade time, Steve Grasso.
Kathy Woods said that Tesla is a winner take most. That leaves an awful lot for Rivian to take. It's been riding its 50-day higher. I think it gets to 30 sometime soon.
Tim?
I like gold here, and I think it's been very defensive in this environment. GDX is the way to get three times your moving gold. GDX.
Dan?
Yeah, if Kathy's selling at 270, she's got a $1,400 price target, I'd be a seller too, probably.
It's been a busy week, Mel. It's a good thing we're going to have your steady hand on the rudder, on the till, the entire week.
I'm leaving town.
What?
I'm back next week on assignments, folks.
Valero, VLO.
Thanks for watching Fast Money. Don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.